Well, as we mentioned, NASA now targeting Sunday as the earliest launch opportunity for the space shuttle Atlantis as engineers wrestle with a fuel sensor glitch inside the orbiter's fuel tank. Our science advisor and author now of Dark Mission, Richard C. Hoagland, on the line. You haven't been happy about this story, Richard, all week.
Well, I'm very worried for the crew because it's obvious that, you know, either we don't have enough money put into NASA, which is what I firmly believe, because I really think that Linda is right. I think that NASA's kind of like a false front Western town, and there's a real space program, which I've talked about for many years, hidden in the background, which is getting all the real money, and these people are basically scapegoats, George, and I am frankly furious, because, you know, a day or two ago, when this problem resurfaced again, there was serious discussion of launching either tomorrow, Saturday, or later today, or Sunday, with two of these four sensors not working. They actually sat in front of the press, you know, yesterday afternoon,
right,
and said, we actually think we might have a workaround. It isn't really ready yet, but we can maybe get it ready in the next few hours. And I mean, I was astonished, as all of my colleagues, professional people who look at the space program, they know what we're discussing, they know the technology, they know the management decisions that should be made. They've seen these two horrible tragedies of Challenger and Columbia, and it's like we learn no lessons because you have a rule book for a reason. You know, it's called flight rules, and you basically write it in the calm of your study or of these meetings when there's no missions. So everybody gets a say, and everybody decides this is what we're going to do if this happens, if that happens, if all these permutations of the concatenation of things that can go wrong. And then you're supposed to stick to the rule book because when you're in, as I said to one of my intel guys the other night, when you're in a firefight and the emotions are running and the schedule pressures are there and people are saying, darn it, we got to get this thing up there. You know, the Europeans have been waiting 15 years and all that. You don't want to be changing the rules. And so for a while there, it looked like they were going to be changing the rules and launching these astronauts on a shuttle where if the engines ran dry, there'd be no sensors to tell the engines that they'd run dry. They'd keep spinning. The pumps would keep spinning. They would explode.
They would explode.
The crew.
Yeah. Well, now, what's the rules now? Three of the four sensors have to be working properly.
No, right? Four of four.
Four of four.
All they right, have actually tightened this afternoon. Wayne Hale, in the evening meeting, where they came out and talked to the press, said the crew, which thank God the crew has an input, suggested that they tighten the rules to four sensors have to be functioning at the moment of liftoff. If sensors go out uphill, which is the NASA ease for going into orbit, the eight-minute climb on those engines into orbit where you go from zero, a standing start, to 17,500 miles per hour. I mean, basically, it's on the chained energy of a small nuclear weapon. That's what it takes to get men and women into orbit on this spacecraft. They will be watching and monitoring, and if something goes wrong as they're climbing into orbit, they believe that they have certain management decisions that will preclude the worst-case scenario of the engines run dry because there's no fuel and they explode. And what they've done is they normally have like a 10-minute window for launch to get to the station.
Right.
They've reduced it now to a minute. There literally is going to be 1 minute when they can launch. And if they miss that minute, they're going to have to recycle for the next day. And the reason for that is, the tighter you make that tolerance, the more in the middle of your window you constrain the shuttle to leave, the more fuel you save getting to the station. The more fuel you save, the more fuel there will be in that big orange tank so that the engines won't run dry if the sensors crap out on us.
Another nail-biting launch.
Oh, it's rickety time, rickety time. Now, here's where I find things really amazingly interesting. I mean, here's the upside to the story. We may actually have a brief window here, George, to get these people to look at things that they have never, ever wanted to look at for the last 10 years that I've been, you know, discussing stuff on the show with you and Art.
Such as?
Why are the sensors still going out? They sat there tonight and they said, we've spent so much money. We've got every engineer in NASA working on this. We thought we'd fix this. Wayne Hale went into exquisite detail about all the things they'd done to rip this thing apart, expose the guts, replace the wires, the sensors, the connectors, and it's still intermittently failing when they put the liquid hydrogen in the big orange tank.
Somebody playing around with them?
No, no. We're dealing with hyperdimensional torsion physics. We're dealing with a physics that all the resources of NASA, $17 billion a year, won't ever be able to fix unless they listen to a new idea. So I'm going to try, through sources, to get them to pay attention to Chapter 2 in Dark Mission, where I go into exquisite detail on the HD model, how the physics is apparent all around us, how the 50 years of Russian experiments we didn't get to look at until, you know, the wall came down and the Soviet Union collapsed have suddenly been made available to us. And if I can get some bright person over there to think outside the box, to look at, I mean, they're really desperate because there's people's lives at stake, the shuttle program's at stake, the space station program is at stake, everything's at stake, including the country and how we look to the world in terms of our technological prowess. Maybe, just maybe, with the help of this audience, George, this unique audience, we can get NASA to pay attention to reason and look at something they are not at all.
Well, we can't keep doing this on every launcher. Hey, by the way, science writer and science fiction writer Jerry Pournelle says hello.
Oh, I love Jerry. I haven't talked to him in years.
I got to get him on the program. Okay, it's Richard C. Hoagland, science advisor, enterprisemission.com, darkmission.net. He's got a bestseller there with Dark Mission with the author Mike Barra as well. Thank you, Richard. I've got open lines for you now for the rest of the night, including a special hotline, at least for this hour. Those of you who have lost appendages, maybe an eye or eyes, an ear, I'll tell you why. I witnessed today one of the most incredible things I've ever seen, a man who had lost part of his arm functioning normally, eating at a restaurant just like he had two. I mean, it didn't faze him at all. And I'm just curious, to those of you who have suffered these situations, what happened to you and how life has been for you? Because so many of us who have our full faculties, except our mental faculty sometimes, take it for granted. So here's that phone number for you, 818-817-0021. That's 818-817-0021. I'm just going to call it the Lost Limb Line. Towards the end of the program tonight, our special tribute to those who give their lives at Pearl Harbor. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to our wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
It's Jeff from Oshawa.
Yeah, Jeff.
Ontario, Canada.
Okay.
You kind of got a weird open line tonight.
I do.
Okay. Well, it hits home.
What happened to you?
I had August 12, 1975, in Toronto, Parliament and Queen. They used to have what they called extractors, which used to spin dry heavy blankets and sleeping bags and that, and I was 12 years old, and the top was malfunctioned, and as it was spinning around, my arm slipped in, and it tore it off.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was happened pretty quick. I went into shock and stuff like that. Brought the sick kids. I'm very fortunate, though. I was brought the sick kids. It was a 19-hour operation. Dr. Davidson did it, I believe. Many operations to follow, and I still got it.
And still have it.
I still have it. It looks a little banged up in that. They removed a radio head from the top bone leading into the elbow to try to give me more movement and stuff like that, which actually made it worse as far as I'm concerned.
How long did it take you to be able to function okay?
I think I was playing hockey by the time I was 13 and a half.
That's incredible.
Well, actually, when I asked to play hockey, they told my father, you might as well, because we're probably going to have to remove it anyway. It's not going to take. Because don't forget, this is back in 1975.
Exactly.
So I wasn't even supposed to be able to move it, and I ended up breaking the cast. It had six pins in there. They finally pulled out the pins and let me go do whatever I wanted to do. And I've had it for just over 30 years, man.
Were some of your opponents Did they ease up on you, or did they play tough hockey?
Oh, no. No one knew any difference.
They didn't know.
With a long-sleeve shirt on me, you wouldn't know any difference. Although I do have pain. I got limited. Like, now I've got no cartilage left, so it's just basically one continuous bone.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that I just recently went to a specialist about getting some bone chips removed, and he just said, you know, you either get it replaced or fuse it. And I just shook my head, and he goes, yeah, I know. He says, you just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, with this high technology, why haven't you changed things?
Because it's a part of me. It's not something you can, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
It's like, you know, soldiers who lose their leg, they still think it's there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I was so overwhelmed by seeing this guy today. I said, you know what, I've never, ever really talked about this. I'm going to just devote a little time to it. I think we're going to get some incredible human success stories here.
Every story like that, I pay quite attention to. There was also a guy in Arizona who had his hand caught in between a rock while hiking, and he actually cut his arm off at the elbow. It was
yes,
on CNN.
I remember that. Remember
yes.
that as well.
Yeah. Well, this guy with the tractor, apparently he did the same type of thing.
Because cut his fingers off this time.
Tractor started on fire or something. He basically had no choice.
My God. Okay, good for you. Thanks.
But, you know, I just, if there's anybody out there that think they don't have hope, there's hope.
There's hope. You're one of them. First time caller line, you're on the air on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Yeah, my name's Nick. This is sort of dealing with the Masons. I've been a Mason for over 18 years, and secretary of the local lodge here in Arkansas.
Sound like a good guy to me.
Well, I try to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've got a lot of bad rep over the years and stuff, but I've been in there. I'm a Roman Catholic, and the Roman Catholic Church really forbids their members from being Masons. And when I first went in, my priest, he was a Monsignor, which is sort of high up in the hierarchy. He said, no, you know, Nick, he said, the church frowns on that, and the bishop really frowns on it, so, you know. All the old timers, you know, but he said, us younger priests and stuff, you know, we understand, you know. He said, as long as you go in there and they don't say nothing derogatory towards the Catholic Church, he said, I have no problem with it.
How do you feel about some people who think the Freemasons are this special interest group that they're out to control everything?
But they're just uninformed. They just are naive. You have people who's bad mouthing the Masons and stuff. And I said, do you like the Children's Hospital, the burn centers and stuff, you know? Shriners Hospital. Oh yeah, they're great thing. I said, well, that's ran by Masons. You know, that's the Masonic order. You know, the Scottish Rite is.
Are there people?
Well, I didn't know that.
Are there people way at the top of Freemasonry who may be dabbling in some of these world order events?
Well, there could be. You know, I mean, you know, that don't mean that they're not also members of the Lions Club and you know the members of.
True.
Something else also, I mean, you know, we're not a religious order. We're just a fraternity of brothers who are out to make the world better for mankind. Part of our order is says that, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, especially, you know, charity, you know, give towards charity. Because charity is something that always, you know, will be there once everything else is gone. Charity, you know, something that we always have to, you know, take care of.
All right, that's a good point. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Hi, George. This is Larry again.
Hey, Larry.
I wanted to give you an update about Christian Wild.
Okay, yeah, please.
Yeah, I got in touch with him, and he's hooked me up with a doctor on the West Coast at Cedars-Sinai Hospital. And
that's right down our way.
Yeah, he's going to give me hopefully a couple of options. I got to get some footwork for him and get some stuff for the records and stuff. But he's going to probably hook me up with a couple of options, and hopefully I can get to have a transplant or something else to do to fix my heart.
Well, any problems along the way here, Larry, while you wait?
No, but I do sometimes have mild episodes of congestive heart failure, but it's not nothing to put me down. But it just really irritates me when doctors tell me that I'm a no-option patient and they don't have any choices to help me.
Well, you keep updating us, okay?
I shall. And I also wanted to tell you that when I bought the Mason thing with the Shriners, the last caller said that the Shriners help with people and stuff. When I was little, one of my surgeries, the Shriners actually helped pay for one of my surgeries.
All right.
When I was a baby.
I love it. Okay, thanks, Larry. Yeah, let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Good morning. Hello?
Hello?
Just got you. Almost disconnected you. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sammy calling from Manhattan.
Hello, Sammy.
I'm a big fan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to tell you a story that happened to my roommate today. It might be a doppelganger story,
a
I think.
Doppelganger. Sure. What happened?
So my roommate is walking home, and you have to pass our balcony to get into the building. And I'm on, like, the first floor up, so it's, like, the second floor. You can see the balcony very clearly. And he comes into the apartment, and he goes, "Were you just smoking a cigarette on the balcony?" And I, first of all, I'm, like, so taken aback because I don't even smoke cigarettes. I haven't smoked a cigarette in, like, a year or two.
Good.
And he goes, "I just saw you outside on the balcony with Das, who's my friend." And he goes, "Is she here?" And I go, "No." And it wouldn't be weird for her to be here. But I go, "I'm alone and I haven't been smoking any cigarettes." And he goes, "That's really weird because I just passed by the balcony and I saw you and I saw Das, and she was wearing red and you were wearing that outfit and you guys were both smoking cigarettes." And I go, "Well, that's weird." So about a couple hours later, there's a knock at the door and it's Das, and she comes in and he comes downstairs and he goes, "Can I see your outfit?" And she comes up and he shows her, and sure enough, she's wearing red.
How weird. And
so weird, right?
But you know what? Doppelganger is the evil side of the good person.
Yeah, but I'm hoping that it's maybe not an evil thing, and hopefully it's not a foreshadowing.
Well, see, they say it is. I mean, if there was another you and you saw her, chances are she'd be totally opposite whatever
right,
you are.
That's true. Well, she was smoking a cigarette, and I don't smoke cigarettes.
See? So. There you go. All right, thanks, Sammy.
Thanks a lot.
Let's move on to our lost limb line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, thank you for calling.
Hey, hi, George. How you doing?
Good.
Oh, listen, 1985, July, I was out in eastern New Mexico, and I was working on an oil field for an oil field company. And me and a coworker had a stick of dynamite go off on us at about 4 feet away. I lost my vision. He lost the side out of one eye, his heels. He blew his heels blew off, I had come through that and was blind for 3 months, and.
Did you think you would, you might never see again?
Well, they told me I'd never see again, and I was pretty upset about that.
Oh, sure.
22 years old, George, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I told my doctors in Albuquerque, I said, "No way." You know, I'm from southern New Mexico. And 3 months later, I started getting my vision back, colors and everything. And they went in. I eventually lost vision out of my right eye. But I gained my vision back in my left eye with some cornea transplants and cleaning up inside the eye.
Excellent.
I went for 18 years, went back to work. 4 years ago, October, I had a microscopic fungus spore off of a tree leaf get into my only eye.
Oh, no.
And started growing inside my left eye.
Tell me you can see out of it.
I can't. I got 2200 vision.
All right, 2200 is not bad. I tell you, before I did my LASIX, I think I was that. Thanks for that story. Back in a moment. Okay, I want to say thank you again. It's our Friday night tradition to all of you listening on your favorite radio stations across North America. StreamLink members, hello to you as you expand into other countries now. People are picking up StreamLink in different countries all around this planet. Those of you listening on XM on Channel 165, hello to you. Then the various chat rooms all over the place. Our dear friends at the NighthawkZone.com, the Fantastic Form, Pirates, the Imaginative Worlds, People, the Into Infinity, Frog Forum, Yahoo Chat Rooms, all over the place, the National Radio Club, Sorcery IRC. If I've missed anybody, I'm sorry. I can't remember everybody. But thank you, all of you, who continue to make Coast to Coast the highest-rated overnight program in the world. And welcome to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Back to the phones. Don't forget the Lost Limb line, which is 818-817-0021. East of the Rockies. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. What was that?
Well, that's a siren. How's that?
Okay.
I just wanted to, I tried to get through the Lost Limb line, but I called this one.
That's okay.
I have I've had a pretty hard time with losing a limb. Also, I'm an Iraqi war veteran. I've lost my limb, and it's pretty uplifting to me. It is to some of the people I work with and some of the veterans I come in contact with. I'm a first federal law enforcement officer that's an amputee in the nation. So.
Good for you.
So, I'm much cruiser right now. So.
Okay, that's right. Do you want to tell us what happened?
Well, I got an IED. Almost took me out. I almost lost my arm, so I'm very fortunate to just lose the lower limb instead of the upper limb. So I think I can do a lot more with. I run a mile in about 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
And not bad.
So it's pretty good to come in contact with veterans I come in contact with, and they see what I'm able to do, and it kind of helps them out.
Good for you.
So anyway, I just wanted to share that with you.
All right, and thank you for serving. Appreciate it. Let's move next to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. It's your turn. Hello there.
Hello.
Hi.
How's it going?
Fine. You?
Going. this is Andy from Minnesota.
Just going. Hi, Andy. What's going on?
Well, it's just funny, your topic. My great uncle, he unfortunately passed away this summer, and went to his funeral and found out he was a Freemason, and the family, you know, they don't know much about Freemason, what they do, and they're, you know, a bunch of them are telling other of the family that it's a cult, and they do bad things, and all this stuff, and getting it off, and a rip roar,
and they're doing this at the wake?
Yeah, at the funeral.
Yeah, okay.
And it's just, you know, you know, it almost made me sick to my stomach. You know, here, you know, my great uncle, he lived to about 95 years old. It's just unfortunate him and a bunch of buddies were out on a, you know, going out on a road driving. They still had their license. They're driving down the road and they got into an accident. And three out of the four died.
Oh.
And, you know, that's what got him. And, you know, then to find out he's a Freemason and, you know, also, he was pretty well off in that he gave a certain percentage of his income towards the Freemasons.
Oh, that,
really pissed the family off, too.
That just pushed him over the edge, didn't it?
It's just one of those things you shake your head about.
Well, it's too bad for the accident. I bet the old boy would still be around. Let's go to our next wild card line. You're on the air with us. Hello there.
George, it's a pleasure to speak for you. I know you hear that all too often, but I sincerely mean it. How are you?
But you can never hear it too often.
Hey, I wanted to respond to your comment earlier. As you come back to the breaks, you say how Coast to Coast is the number one overnight show, and it's because of us listeners, but I just wanted to reiterate it's because of actually people like you and Ian Punnett and Art Bell that it's number one. So
it's,
don't forget that.
It's the team. Old Art gave me a pretty big plateau to start with, I'll tell you that.
Hey, I had a quick question about Linda Moulton Howe. I actually wanted to reach her earlier when she was online, but I was unable to. She was talking about this 1973 thing that people will remember at the early part of your show. Were there any actual recordings of the KKOB broadcast? I know in the world we live in now, digital broadcasting and recording seems like something that happens automatically, but are those actually available for us to listen back and actually hear that? Because wouldn't that be proving evidence to NASA and the government that, hey, this indeed happened?
Yes, we have played a couple little clips in the past. Then there's also a company out there that sells them. I don't publicize who they are or give out their website, but it's out there. It's available. It's great old-time radio, and it's exciting to listen to. Speaking about exciting, don't forget once again, now that this clock is really ticking for the holidays, I'll be live on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night. We'll be here for you. Open lines, guests, and special clips. We'll play only Christmas music on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night. That will be it. You won't get it before or after on the program because you'll get it all over the place. But those of you who want to call your, we've sent out emails. Some places on Christmas Eve just decide to run music because they're not aware that their syndicated shows might be live. We are. If you're in your particular market, no matter where you are, St. Louis especially, because they normally, my station, they play music, call them. Call your stations and say, look, Coast to Coast is live on Christmas Eve and Christmas Day night, and just make sure that they flip the switch, because I'm not sure you want to listen to Christmas music all night long, do you? Let's go to the Lost Limb line. You are on Coast to Coast with us. Welcome to the program. Hi there.
Hi, George, is that me?
Yes, sir. Hi.
How you doing? Well, I lost my left leg above the knee over the summer. I wish I could say it was something exciting like some of the other callers, like a war or something exploded, but it was just a mundane combination of diabetes and no insurance.
Oh, I'm laughing with you, not against you. So it was just it was a prolonged thing. It was happening, and you didn't have the money to help yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I had a couple of hospital stays prior, but I knew instinctively, you know, that you get wiped out medically as far as the cost without insurance. And so I tend to stay away and try to tackle the diabetes on my own, but it snuck up on me and I got a bad infection in my leg. And so they had to cut it off above the knee.
Well, how are you functioning now?
I'm okay now. I lost the leg in beginning of January and I got my prosthetic in early October and I'm walking around with the prosthetic and a cane. I'm doing pretty well with that.
Good for you. You know, considering that it just happened recently.
Yeah, it's pretty recent for me, yeah.
Well, keep plugging along.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sure.
All right. Let's go next to our first-time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Yeah, hi. It's Miles Rozell. I'm calling from Hamilton, Ontario.
Hello, Miles.
Yes, I have a plastic ankle that I've had since I was 12 years old. I fell off a 40-foot cliff.
A plastic ankle?
Yes.
I've never heard of that before.
I've never heard of it neither before. I guess that was an experiment.
Okay, tell us about the episode.
I was out with my friend one day, and we were trying to catch the swallows out of the holes in the cliffs.
Uh-huh.
And I had slipped over the edge and was hanging on for dear life. I hollered to the friend, go get help. I'm going over. I looked over the edge, and first thing that came into my mind was when they taught you to sacrifice a limb to absorb all the shock. So I opted to sacrifice my leg.
Oh, so while you're up there dangling, what are you thinking about? And how long were you up there?
I would say it felt like 7 minutes staring down, but it was probably less than half a minute.
Adrenaline pumping. Are you scared or do you even think about that?
Terrified.
You are terrified.
Terrified.
And so when the drop happens, are you bouncing along the side of the rocks and the cliffs
straight down?
Straight down,
no
free fall.
Landing on clay boulders.
Did it feel like you were falling forever or quickly?
I felt like you were falling forever. And I was almost like a dream, exactly like a dream. I thought it was like never going to end.
Did it knock you out when you hit?
No, I was fully conscious, I guess apparently in shock because I felt no pain whatsoever. I tried to stand up and there was no way of moving. My foot was the size of a football.
Oh my God. And was it bent any funny way or anything like that?
I tried not to look. Less I looked, the less it was kind of obvious.
How long did it take to get help and how did they get you up?
Apparently it took 45 minutes by the time, some adults and my parents came running to help me. It was actually my grandparents. Then it was another 45 minutes to the hospital. And then I remember getting a big needle and I was out. I had a cast on for a year and a half. And I was never supposed to walk without a cane or any type of... I had to have help to walk. My grandfather insisted that I would walk again, and he helped me out on a hockey rink for therapy, and I could have become a professional hockey player at one point in my life.
With a, you're kidding me, with a plastic ankle?
Exactly. And I chose to go to school instead.
And now, do you walk okay and run okay?
No problems. Once in a while, it'll lock up on me, but other than that, nobody would ever know that I have a plastic ankle. And nobody would ever know that I've ever been injured like that. 95% of my weight is always on my right leg. I mean, it might not be 95% now, but at one time it was 95% on the one leg. Now it's a little bit more on the other leg, but nobody knows.
While you were falling, did you ever...
probably listening now, and they don't even know.
Did you ever have the feeling that an angel or anything like that was helping you?
The minute I had that thought pop in my head, it was like it was given to me, that thought. I actually have another wicked story, but, you know, I could say that for another time because you got other callers.
Why, did you lose any other parts?
No, but on the way home, when I drive home, I always have a vision of a blue color that is unlike any color that I've ever seen on this planet. As I look into the windshield of the vehicle, I see a gray staring at me all the time as he's observing everything I do daily.
They're probably...
So it's like looking into another dimension.
That could be. Thank you for sharing those stories with us. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hello, George. This is Skip.
Hey, Skip. Where are you calling from?
Victoria, Texas.
Okay. Good to have you with us. You're close to Austin, aren't you?
Yes. In fact, that's exactly what I was going to ask you about.
Oh, about Austin, Texas?
Yes. I heard that you were going to be in Austin, Texas.
I'm going to be there, I think it's Saturday, January 27th, at, I'll be there doing their show at night at KLBJ, and then we'll have the event, the Talk Fest, the next day.
Okay, because I was just wondering, because I was, thought, well, I know to get my bus tickets in January, but I don't know what day, and I don't want to spend time with somebody or something, you know, for a whole month.
Come on out on that Saturday.
Okay.
All right.
I got one other quick favor.
I'll have Alex Jones with me, too.
Pardon me?
Alex Jones will be with me that
day. Great. I got one other favor I want to ask of you.
Sure, if I can.
I was reading your article one time in NewsDark.
After Dark, yeah.
About Jessup's Clock.
Mm-hmm.
Could you play that Johnny Cash song, My Grandfather's Clock? Because I can't even find old-time country stations that play it. Around.
Yep. Danny tells me he can get it for you.
Okay.
So you just keep listening tonight.
Sure will.
He's got the fastest hands in the West. I know I had my wallet on the table once and it was gone in an instant. Lost Limb Line, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Mr. Norrie.
Hi, sir.
Enjoyed listening to you for many years. Mike from St. Louis.
Oh, Mike, how are you? Did you listen? Yeah, you must have listened to the old Nighthawk show.
I certainly did.
I miss that sometimes. I think I'm going to call Tim Dorsey one day when I just go back, you know, and I'm going back for Christmas. I wouldn't mind coming in to do an hour before Coast to Coast.
I used to love your ending bumper music.
With the phone calls. I got that from the movie Talk Radio.
Superman.
Yeah. Oh, that one too. Yeah,
that was awesome.
That was the open at 11 o'clock.
Listen, I was 3 years old. I'm in my 60s now. I was 3 years old. I dropped a hot Coke bottle, exploded, and I lost the sight of my left eye. Doctors at Barnes Hospital had to remove my left eye, and this is back in the late 40s now.
Oh, my God.
They had to remove my left eye in order to save the sight in my right eye. And as I progressed in age, I remember the doctor, my parents telling me that the ophthalmologist told my parents and the surgeons told my parents, let him grow up and live a normal life. Well, I played sports in school. I had, when I first started wearing a prosthesis, they were made out of blown glass, like a Christmas tree ornament. And eventually acrylic plastics came into vogue. But I remember getting in a fight in fourth grade, and I came home with a broken glass eye. But in any case, I had no depth perception, but the doctors told my parents that his brain will literally take over and sympathize with his good eye. And I played ball as a kid. I could literally see a baseball coming at me, and my brain would tell me how far away it was and how fast it was coming. And I played first base, had no trouble at all.
That's amazing.
It just and I for the last 30 years I've earned a living as a professional photographer, so I've used one eye to earn a living with, to focus the camera.
I'm going to tell you a joke in just a moment here, but since you've got this great sense of humor, Michael.
Is that the wood-eyed joke?
If your name was Jack, you'd be the one-eyed Jack.
Correct.
But anyways, listen to this great story. Sammy Davis Jr., one eye, right?
Right.
He is,
I met him, too.
Right. He's driving from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, and he is just speeding. He's doing 95 miles an hour. He gets stopped by a Nevada trooper. The trooper comes up to him, knocks on the window. Davis rolls it down, and he says, yes, officer. And he said, oh, it's Sammy Davis Jr. He says, Mr. Davis, do you know you were doing 95 miles an hour? And he looked up at him, and Sammy said, look, you want me to look at the speedometer or the road?
Very good.
Not bad. Hey, take care, and I'll be in St. Louis in a few weeks.
Hey, and congratulations, Grandpa.
Yeah, number four. Can you believe that?
Oh, yeah.
Four little ones. Little Gavin doing well. Let's go to West of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, this is Carl, the night guard from Kingman again.
Hey, hi.
Hey, last time I called, I didn't get to tell you my grandfather worked here at the airport during World War II in Kingman.
Okay.
And evidently it was a huge hub of activity in World War II, planes and bombers coming in and out of here. And because it's a full-size airstrip, you can land any plane here.
Sure.
And at the end of World War II, they flew in thousands and thousands of planes. And they just dismantled the wings and dug trenches and buried them all.
And what, they buried them all?
They buried every one of them. Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah, and they buried Jeeps. They buried trucks.
Why?
I don't know. My grandfather was, he worked at the airport here, and he buried the machinery for them.
Guess they didn't want them to get in the hands of anybody else.
I guess not.
That's a strange, strange story.
So there's umpteen thousands of planes and aircraft and everything under the ground here.
Deep. How deep?
I never got that out of my grandfather. He died last year.
I bet it covers at least by 10, 20, 30 feet.
Oh, could be. And the area is... There's no housing or anything out here. It's just open desert.
Did he ever say if they buried any flying saucers?
He did say that he worked on some secret bases up in the mountains around here.
What did he see?
He worked for the government, and he built things. He was a builder. Jack of all trades, but
master of many, I trust.
Yeah, and he worked on the dam, on Hoover Dam. And he built so many secret bases around here. He couldn't tell me them all, but he told me where to look for some of them if I wanted to go find them.
Well, I got to tell you, those secret bases are out there. You know, we're going to continue with Open Lines. Another hour to go. Our Lost Limb line. I might as well keep that open. Fascinating callers, and I'm very impressed that you continue to cherish life, those of you who have lost body parts. 818-817-0021. That's the phone number for the Lost Limb line. But those of you who still want to call the other lines, you can do that too. But I'm reserving this line just for the Lost Limb line. 818-817-0021. At the end of the program, coming up in about an hour, we will have our special tribute to the survivors and to those who gave their lives at Pearl Harbor 66 years ago.